Every 10 seconds, a new small business is started. Every day, more and more people are deciding they want to be their own boss and making huge sacrifices to live out their dreams. Yet, they have no place to turn for support. Entrepreneurs of the world, unite and let's talk business.
This is Dr. Dennis Waitley. You're listening to Let's Talk Business, which I think is probably the most important show that you can listen to on becoming an entrepreneur in a fast-forward world.
The Let's Talk Business Network is dedicated to helping entrepreneurs and small business owners succeed. So get ready to be helped, informed, and inspired, because it's time for Let's Talk Business with veteran entrepreneur and a man who was voted one of the 100 most important talk show hosts, Mitch Schlimmer.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Business. I'm your host, Mitch Schlimmer, and if you're a first-time listener here in Atlanta, you're listening to the radio talk show all about entrepreneurship, innovation, and youth empowerment right here on 91.1 on your FM dial, WREK, 100,000 watts, and we've got a great show for you today. We've got two great guests. Our first guest is joining us all the way from Arizona, and that is none other than Larry Wingate, and we're going to be talking to Larry about his journey and his books, and more importantly, his no-nonsense style of getting people to take accountability for themselves and helping them with their lives and their businesses. And our second guest, I tell you what, we're going to focus on appreciation. And none other than Chester Elton is going to be here. And we're going to talk about that and much more, including his two books. Well, as I mentioned, my first guest joining us all the way from Paradise Valley, Arizona, a beautiful place, is Larry Wingate. And Larry's been called a lot of things, including the Pitbull of personal development. He has five times had New York Times, Wall Street Journal best-selling books. A matter of fact, he's a television personality who has hosted his own television series on A&E. You've probably have seen Larry. He's been featured in two CNBC specials. He's had his own PBS special. He's a contributor all the time on Fox News, Fox Business, and so much more. And matter of fact, like one of our other guests, Shep Hyken, that is, he is also in the International Speaker Hall of Fame. Larry, welcome to Let's Talk Business.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me.
How you doing?
I'm terrific.
I tell you what, I really enjoyed your books, and obviously, you know, no nonsense, as we both know, Larry. And one thing, we've got some real good quality time here, and you know, I always find the journey of people, including people, you know, that like yourself, really fascinating. And I love my listeners to learn from that journey and how you got here today. And obviously, you know, you're running your own business, and you know, how you got here, I think, is important for people to learn. So, Larry, maybe you could take us back and tell us how you really got started here and how you really started to not only build this company, but to a large extent, you know, the Larry Wingate brand.
Well, I started out dirt poor in Muskogee, Oklahoma. I was born dirt poor, decided I wanted to get rich, didn't really have any examples on what that looked like or what I needed to do. So the one thing I knew I could do that most people weren't willing to do was work harder than everybody else. So no matter what I was hired to do, I just worked harder. So I started while I was in college with Southwestern Bell. I ended up 12 years later as the area sales manager for the state of Kansas for AT&T. I left at divestiture, started my own telecommunications company, did really well. Went to work one day, and the Corporation Commission had ruled that what I did for a living in the telecommunications business wasn't going to be allowed anymore, and they didn't grandfather me in. So I went to work one day, a rich guy, and went home that day bankrupt and lost it all. So I started out poor, got rich, went bankrupt, and went from that to multimillionaire in the personal development industry. So when all that happened to me, I decided if there's one thing I knew how to do, it was talk, and I wanted to be a speaker. So I started out as a sales trainer in this industry. And then I found out people thought I was funny. Then I found out to pay you a whole lot more to make people laugh than they do to teach them how to sell. And so I became sort of a typical motivational humorist personal development guy. About 12 years ago, I got sick of that. So sick of every word that came out of my mouth because it just didn't feel authentic. And I decided I was just going to start telling people the truth. And the truth, in my opinion, is life's your own damn fault. You did it. You created it. Your thoughts, your words, your actions did it. Shut up. Stop whining. Take responsibility for it. And that message seemed to resonate with people. As a result, I wrote 5 bestsellers and established probably the most recognizable brand in our industry. Say what you want to about me. I'm easy to spot in a crowd. And it involves having a look, having an attitude, being able to say what I say in the way that I say it, and have people respond well to it.
Well, Larry, one of the things that you said, which is really critical, is people want the truth. And, you know, I get the sense that you have, you know, clearly, you know, worked at creating, I don't want to say this character because that would be wrong, totally wrong. It is who you are. But, you definitely have a very unique style, you know, Ray-Bans and all, you know, custom-made boots. And as we both know, you know, no BS. And so how did you come up with this? Is it just something that, hey, Mitch, this is who I am? Or, you know, this is what I thought would resonate. And as I said, you know, in my own way, also helped with the humor part of things.
Well, being funny does help. I've discovered they'll let you by with about anything as long as you still make them laugh. So while I can be incredibly abrupt, I won't say rude, abrupt in my approach to life and business and parenting. You know, I've written on a variety of topics, personal development, personal finance, business, parenting, everything. Regardless of what I approach, I do it with the same style. And in developing this style, I learned to just be true to myself, my authentic self, which is I don't have time for tact. You know, even one of my books is called No Time for Tact. I believe people really do want the truth. I don't think people will, for the most part, believe what you have to say or even listen to what you have to say. However, I've discovered people always listen to see if you believe what you have to say. And while I have lots of people who don't like me, don't like my style, don't like my approach, and don't agree with me, they are still fans of mine because they're fans of authenticity and they are fans of the fact that I say what I believe. And this really is who I am. I mean, if you called me at 3 in the morning and say, Larry, where do you stand on this? It would be the same as it would at 3 in the afternoon the next day. It's not a character. It's not a role. I don't go on stage with a stage persona or go on television to do interviews with a persona. This really is who I am and what I believe. As far as the look, well, the look just developed because I got tired of wearing suits and doing what everybody else did and looking like everybody else looked, as well as at some point in my career saying what everybody else said. So I decided I was just going to dress the way I wanted to. When I was a little boy growing up poor in Muskogee, Oklahoma, I used to sit and watch television with my grandmother on Saturday afternoons, and we'd watch Porter Wagner. And Porter Wagner had the wildest Western costumes, and I just thought to myself, that must be how rich people dress. And I told myself when I was a little boy, if I ever got rich, I was going to dress like that. And finally, I got to the point I was rich, and I didn't care what anybody thought anyway, so I started dressing what I wanted to, which is wild, flashy shirts and custom cowboy boots and more rings than I got fingers and earrings and the glasses and the whole thing. And people just know that the look kind of goes with the attitude, and it does set me apart from the crowd.
No, it does. And, you know, Larry, when I think back, and obviously, you know, here you are running a very successful business, and then all of a sudden, you know, the business is gone and you've got all these bills and all these things and people that, you know, counted on you. How did you deal with that? How did you overcome being in business, being successful, and all of a sudden it's gone?
Well, I didn't give myself any options. The point was I still had commitments. Like you said, I had a family to take care of. I had people I owed money to. And they didn't care about the fact that my business had gone under. The Corporation Commission ruled it. I wasn't going to be able to do that anymore. That was my story. It wasn't their story. So I had a commitment to my commitment. So I did whatever it took. And I got my ego out of the way and went back to work. When I started originally, I didn't have anything, and I made my way and got rich. So I was just back to a starting place again. So I went back to work. One day I'm the president of the company. The next day I'm going door to door in my neighborhood, knocking on my neighbor's door saying, can I mow your yard or rake your leaves? Was it humiliating? Absolutely. Did it matter? No. I was willing to do what it takes. The problem right now I see in society is we have so many people who feel entitled and they're not willing to do whatever it takes. They've got their ego in the way of their commitments.
Well, I tell you, you know, you walk the talk. I mean, it's very clear here that, you know, you're no nonsense. One of the things we have here at the Let's Talk Business Network, we're very involved in a foundation for kids called the Magic Wand Foundation, and we teach them mindsets all about life and living their ultimate life. And one of them is 100% accountable and taking responsibility not only for your actions, but more importantly, your happiness and your success. And, you know, you're all about being 100% accountable, man.
Well, I am. And I think one of the sad things right now is we look to our employers to make us happy or to be fulfilled. That's not your employer's job. Your businesses exist for one reason and one reason only, and that's to be profitable. Your job when you go to work every single day is to help that company be more profitable, whether it's your company or somebody else's, to help that company be profitable. How are you profitable? You serve customers well. The better you serve your customers, the more your customers will pay you and be dedicated to you and loyal to you. That keeps your company in business. But your happiness is your responsibility. Your fulfillment is your responsibility. So I'm all about personal accountability, going back to the idea that what you say, what you think, and what you do is up to you. It's your choice. And the consequences you receive, in other words, your results, those are your fault. If they're good, that's your fault. If they're bad, that's your fault. Accept it, deal with it, and handle it.
And move on. And, you know, Larry, one thing in reading all your materials that really, really caught my attention, and I know my listeners here, you know, are going to want to learn this from you. And again, listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Let's Talk Business right here on WREK, 100,000 watts and 91.1 on your FM dial. And joining us from Arizona is Larry Wingate, and we're talking about his books and his journey and trying to help all of you. And Larry knows a lot about a lot of things, including business. And matter of fact, is even trademarked, you know, being the pit bull of personal development. And his style many times is can be a controversial, direct, sometimes, as he says, even a little irrational in his manner, and of course, many times funny. But Larry, you are clear on lots of things, including what you and I might call your 10 rules for business success. And I'd love to share these rules with the listeners. So let's start with rule number one, and that is a deal is a deal.
In other words, when you give your word, you keep your word. I don't care if it's convenient. I don't care if it's embarrassing for you. I don't care if it even costs you money. Once you give your word, that's your word. A deal's a deal. You keep your word.
So let's go now to number two. I really would love to go through these. I believe number two is, you know, do what you said you would do, and when you said you would do it, and the way you said you would do it.
You know, that's my really probably my most favorite. I wish I'd placed that number one on the card there. Do what you said you would do, when you said you would do it, the way you said you would do it. You know, that's all your customers want from you. That's all you want from your customers. That's all any employer wants from their employee or any employee wants from their employer. That's what your husband wants from you, your wife wants from you. That's what your kids want from you and you want from your kids. That's it. Just do what you said you would do, when you said you would do it, the way you said you would do it.
Do the right thing every time. Not the cheap thing or the easy thing, but the right thing.
Yeah, sometimes we're looking for the easy way out or the cheap way out. I say to forget all that stuff. Just do the right thing. And by the way, you never have to ask what the right thing is. I get so sick, and I get hundreds of emails, believe me, every month from people wanting to know what the right thing is. It's the dumbest emails in the world. You know what the right thing is. In fact, if you had to ask yourself the question, is this the right thing? You already know. You never have to ask if something is the right thing. You know. Just do the right thing.
It's amazing, Larry, how, as you're alluding to, you know, that inner compass, call it gut, call it what you want, it really knows the right thing.
It's amazing, really. If you have to ask yourself the question, it's not right. You never have to ask yourself if it's right. You know.
Be the person others can count on to get things done.
Yep, if you're going to be known for something, and everybody has a reputation, in any business you have a reputation, with your customers you have a reputation, that is your brand. On a personal level, that is your brand. And if you're going to establish a brand within your organization or with your customers, you want it to be, you're the guy that folks can count on to get things done. You will always have a job if you're known for that.
Tell you, one of my favorites, Larry, is work hard on your job and work harder on yourself.
Yeah, it's amazing how we forget to work on ourselves. You know, everything that you do is a reflection of who you are. And so if you're smarter, you will end up with better results. So spend some time reading books, staying healthy, taking care of yourself. Do the right thing for yourself. Become totally selfish and a hedonist. Take care of yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, in every single way. You will end up being a better employer, a better employee. You'll be a better parent for it, a better leader, a better manager.
Larry, who do you actually, you know, enjoy reading and learning from? I find that very successful people tend to be voracious learners, some more than others, but there's certain people that, you know, when they look back on their journey, they might say, you know what, Mitch, believe it or not, you know, someone like Zig Ziglar was actually someone that really influenced me. Who are the people that really have helped you?
Well, I've read, in the last 20 years, over 4,000 books on every topic you can imagine. Books that cover thousands of years of information. So I read a lot. I don't know anybody who read as many books as I have. But if I had to look back at one person over the years that influenced me the most and probably influenced what I talk about and the way I talk about it, it would have been Jim Rohn. Jim Rohn was just a huge influence on me. And I listened to everything that he ever recorded, read everything that he wrote. And what always struck me about Rohn, and this is what influenced my business career and what I do today, is he always talked about principles, not tactics, principles. And that's what I do. I have a handful of principles, responsibility, ethics, honesty, integrity, and then I apply those principles in a variety of different ways. But my core principles are always the same, and that's one of the things Rohn taught me, was speak about principles.
Well, listeners, he's talking about, I believe, the late Jim Rohn from Canada, who was an incredible guy and an incredible speaker, R-O-H-N. Definitely look Jim up, and as Larry's alluded to, you will learn a lot from him. Let's go to the next one here, which is never tolerate poor performance in yourself or others.
Yeah, we put up with way too much. I think especially as in business and as employers. We put up with bad attitudes. We put up with people being late. We put up with less than good work effort and work ethic from the people who work for us. And that's the reason things have slipped so much. If you see poor performance in an employee, handle it on day one. Don't put it off. Address it head on. Don't tolerate poor performance. Whatever you tolerate, that makes you an accessory to the crime on that deal. And then go to the mirror and look at yourself and say, what kind of an example am I? Don't tolerate poor performance in yourself either.
No, I think obviously you're alluding to, you know what, if you don't give it your all, or more importantly, hold yourself accountable, you'll never do it for anyone else. But what I really like also is focus on accomplishment, not activity.
Yeah, it's one of the mistakes we make in business. We talk about how busy we are, and we even pride ourselves on the fact that maybe our team that's working with us or our employees, they're just so busy. It doesn't matter. Are you getting anything done? We all know times in our own lives and the people who work for us, we see people be incredibly busy, and yet they're not getting anything done. The thing that you should reward and focus on always is accomplishment. Talk about what gets done, not about what you're doing.
Well, I always remember when I had Don Shula on, a Hall of Fame football coach, and he said to me, Mitch, never confuse action for results. And that's always stuck with me, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
But so works faster, smarter, and harder.
Yeah, that's sort of a basic principle of mine. Just no matter what you're doing, work faster, work smarter, work harder. That was always my key. I did my best early on. While I wasn't the smartest guy out there, I knew I could work harder than anybody else. When I went into the job world and I was out there with other really employees that were competing, I knew I could work faster than them. And then it went back to working on myself to make sure I work smarter than everybody else. Those three keys right there will always serve you well.
Well, I tell you, I have found, studying entrepreneurs as well, the majority of them, when you really look at their journeys, very much like you, Larry, the ones that win really do outwork everyone. It really is a lot of work. And that's why it's so important that you love what you do and you're passionate about what you do, because you got to give it a lot. And as we start wrapping down your 10 rules for business success, number 9 is you are paid to work. You aren't paid to play, socialize, be happy, or like your job, only to work.
That's true, and that bothers a lot of folks. That's probably the most controversial one on the whole list. I believe you're paid to work. The problem is right now we've told people they got to love their job all day long. That's unreasonable. The point is no one cares whether you like your job. No one cares whether you're happy. If you take a job, you've agreed to do the job. You do it whether you're in a good mood, whether you feel good that day, whether you feel motivated, whether it's your purpose or your passion. If you've been paid to do the job, you do the job. That's what your customers expect from you, and that's what your employer expects from you. Right now, you don't care what's going on in my life. My job right now for 30 minutes with you is to give you the best interview I can. It's not your concern what's going on in my personal life or my business life. My job for 30 minutes is to give you my best. And that's what you have to focus on.
I agree with you, and vice versa. So, one of the ones that I know that you're not a big fan of time management. So number 10, manage priorities, not time.
Your time, your energy, and your money always go to what's important to you. In other words, your priorities. If you've got your priorities right, time, energy, and money pretty much take care of themselves if your priorities are right. So I always ask people what their priorities are. I've done a lot of personal financial work in the past. I had a television show on A&E that did that, and I could go through and figure out where people were spending their money and know exactly what was important to them. I can track how you spend your time, and I'll know what's important to you. Just track what you're doing in terms of time, energy, and money, and you'll figure out your priorities. You want to change those things, make sure your priorities are right.
Some great advice, and if you never saw Larry's show, Big Spender, it definitely was enjoyable, but more importantly, it really helped a lot of people. You know, Larry, when I think about you, one of the things that kind of hits me is what I will call a favorite quote of yours, where in one of your books you actually write, expect the best, but be prepared for the worst. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I do believe that you should always expect the best. You should have an expectation that good things will happen to you based on your efforts. However, everybody needs a backup plan. You need a plan B. And you need to make sure that you're prepared for whatever happens, which means that you've saved, that you've got, from a financial standpoint, you've saved, you've done the things necessary in case things go wrong. You see, the problem is right now, we get to the point, we tell entrepreneurs and we tell people who are young that and people are starting out on this journey of success, we don't prepare them for the fact, and it is a fact, almost everything is going to go wrong. Almost everything. Every disaster that you ever expected, that's probably going to happen to you. Times are tough. And you have to have a plan to get through the bad times. So you need to expect the best, but you need to prepare for the worst. Because the reality of the situation, you can do everything in the world right, and it still could go wrong.
One of the things, Larry, that I've shared with people on the show is, a lot of times you write business plans and you surround yourself with really good people and you do a lot of the right things, but I have a box that I keep in my office, and it's what I call the what you don't know, you don't know. And there's a lot you know, you don't know, you don't know. And then there are, as you and I know, which you experience, things that who could have thunk it in their wildest dreams. You can't even make up something that could happen, including out of your hands. But as you said, no pity parties, you get back up and you move forward. One of the things that you see with people, and especially entrepreneurs, a lot of people beat themselves. The word that you use, including in your book, is sabotage. And I thought if anyone could help answer this, is how to get people to really, stop sabotaging themselves.
Well, the way you stop sabotaging yourself is you're very, very honest and realistic with what you really want. It goes, it all sort of ties together with your priorities and what's really important to you. If it's important enough to you, you'll do what it takes. You know, my plan for success is really pretty simple, Mitch. This is all you need. You need a sheet of paper and a pen. It's amazing how people decide they want to be successful and they don't have a sheet of paper and a pen. But you get out your sheet of paper and a pen and you make a list. You make a list of realistically where you are. And then you make a list of how you would like for it to be. So take some real accounting down of where you are financially and your relationships and your career and your business and your personal life with your health. Figure out where you are, figure out where you want to be, and then figure out what you're going to give up to get from where you are to where you want to be. You see, I speak in terms of sacrifice. We've made a huge error out there in the personal development industry and the coaching industry, telling people they can have it all. No, you can't. You can't have it all. You've got to choose. And you've got to choose what you're willing to give up in order to reach your goals and to be successful. We've told people you can get successful. No, you've got to give up what's making you unsuccessful. You don't get rich. You give up what's making you broke. You don't get skinny. You give up what's making you fat. Life's about sacrifice and making choices. And when we understand that we're going to have to give some things up, make some sacrifices, and choose better based on what's really important to us, then you start to live a different life.
Well, Larry, as you've said all along today, it's up to you. You know, don't blame anybody else. You know, you are 100% accountable, and you need to act that way. And I think that's one of the reasons, regardless of style, I think you resonate with a lot of people because eventually, you know, it's almost like when someone laughs at a joke. They laugh at a joke, not because it's funny, because it's reality. And I think a lot of the things you say are the truth.
Well, I hope everything I say is the truth. The problem is right now, we expect the truth to be pretty, and sometimes the truth doesn't have any embellishments. It just is what it is. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it hurts. That's the way it is. That's how you know it's the truth. It just is what it is. And I've never, ever tried to make myself easy to agree with. My goal is to be impossible to disagree with. How can you disagree with the fact that if you spend more than you make, you're going to end up broke? If you take in more calories than you expend, you're going to end up fat. If you keep doing stupid things, you're going to end up with bad results. All those things are just common sense. And that's what I try to do in all my books, regardless of the topic that I'm on, talk about common sense ideas. Change the way you choose. Choose better based on your priorities, and you'll end up with better results. That's pretty hard to argue with.
Pretty hard to argue with. I tell you, one of the other things that you've said, and you know, and that relates to basically, you know, what you think about and you talk about and you do something about is what comes about. Amen.
Yeah, it's what you think about, talk about, and get off your butt and do something about. Action changes things.
And in wrapping up here, you know, in reading the books and again getting a really good sense for Larry Wingate, I think one of the things is the importance of love and service to others. And I'd love for you to close on those feelings, Larry.
Well, I do what I do based on love and service to others. We all serve in different ways, but you have to understand, regardless of what your job is at a company, I don't care if you're the janitor or the company president or a customer service agent, you're there to serve others. I serve others through a harsh reality sometimes. You serve in the way you do. But when you keep a motive of love and service, you do what you do out of love for people, you'll figure out a way to do it in such a way that will serve others well. And remember, the better you serve others, the better they serve you. That's the way it works.
It's just like a servant leadership. But again, listeners, go out and first of all, go to Larry's website at www.larrywingate.com. You will see his information, his blogs, how you can buy his books and so much more. And as I mentioned here, you know, we've had the pit bull of personal development on, but more importantly, when you really get to know him and hopefully you get a good sense for his soul today, and that is he really cares and he loved people to be successful, but it all starts with you. And Larry, hey, hopefully you enjoyed yourself today.
I did. I had a great time. I appreciate you having me on.
It was my pleasure. I want to thank you and Mary and Butter for giving us the time. and let's stay in touch.
All right, we will. Have me on anytime. Thanks so much, Mitch.
Well, I want to thank, of course, Larry Wingate. Boy, you talk about no nonsense. This is a guy that tells it the way it is. But as I said, I think he's spot on. And one of the reasons I had him on, I think what you learned today, he can really help you. And my second guest, I tell you, boy, you want to talk about some great books. And I love the work that he's been doing. And it's none other than Chester Elton. And many have called him actually the Apostle of Appreciation. He has written numerous New York Times bestsellers. And some of my favorites is The Carrot Principle. And he also wrote The Orange Revolution. He has been on all kinds of TV programs. You've probably seen him everywhere, including on 60 Minutes, CNN, ABC, Money Matters, and the list goes on and on and on. He also does a lot of speaking all over the world. Chester, welcome to Let's Talk Business.
No, listen, thanks for having me, Mitch. Pleasure to be on your show.
Hey, I tell you what, it's an honor to have you on, and I want to thank you, and I know all my listeners are going to learn a lot today. And one thing I love to do, Chet, is in the beginning of a show, is get a sense for who you are and your journey and, you know, how you got here, because I think a lot of times our listeners learn from that journey. So maybe you could talk a little bit about the early years and how eventually you opened up your company and co-authored these books.
Great question. You know, it's funny. People say, so did you always want to be an author and a speaker? And I thought, no. You know, I don't, very few people set out to do what they end up doing. I was always involved in media and sales. My dad ran radio stations up in Canada. So it was always fun to be part of radio and TV. And I have four older brothers that are all in advertising and sales and so on. So I ended up in New York City starting my career selling TV advertising time and having a great time doing that, but never really felt like I was changing the world very much, you know, by selling a Super Bowl spot in Columbus, Ohio during halftime, you know. So my wife and I started to look at different opportunities, and I started a great career with a company called O.C. Tanner. I was their regional sales manager, and we sold recognition programs, which I always loved. You know, I played a lot of sports when I was a kid and performed in theater and music, and always loved the competitions and the award ceremonies. And so it was a great spot for me, and I really felt like that really was making work more enjoyable for people when they performed and they were valued for what they did, whether it was, you know, their length of service or performing in sales and so on. So had a wonderful career there for about 19 years, actually, and we wrote a lot of the books that you referred to with my co-author, Adrian Gostick, while we were at O.C. Tanner. And then just this year, and I know you've got a lot of entrepreneurs listening to your show, we decided we wanted to paint on a little bigger canvas and impact more people's work at life, not just with recognition and team building, but how do you build those great cultures, you know, where you come to work every day and you feel that you're enabled, that you're engaged in your work, and you're energized by your leadership. And so January of this year, Adrian and I formed our own little company called The Culture Works, you know, making work more rewarding. And gosh, we've had a spectacular year. We've written a new book that comes out next April. We've brought on some consulting clients. We still write and speak, as you mentioned, all over the world. And so it's been a journey that went through sales to finding our noble cause, to finding a great partner to write books with, to speaking at conferences and really having more fun than humans should be allowed. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I tell you what, and you see why I asked it, because your story is a fairly typical story, and that is, you know, who would have thunk it? I mean, lots of times people go to school, they get certain degrees, and you know, they look back on their life 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years and say, God, I never thought I would be doing this. And the journey is fascinating. One of the things I thought you might be able to share, I mean, here you are, you know, selling media time, obviously writing books. What are some of the big lessons that you learned along the way that you could share with our listeners, especially those that are thinking about starting a business?
Well, you know, one of the lessons that, and I learned, you know, at a very young age from my father, who, you know, to me was the ultimate, you know, just good guy more than anything, and a great leader in his own right at the radio stations that he was involved in. But it is that just how many good people there are out there, You know, I think particularly when we started our little business in January, we thought, well, gosh, you know, who's out there that can help us, and will they help us? And the answer is, you know what, there are so many good people out there that are already within your sphere of influence, people that you've done business with, people that you're friends with, that really do rally around you and want to help you and help you succeed. I think so often we get caught up in the business section of the local newspaper or the, you know, local news, and we hear all these horrible stories about all these horrible people, you know, particularly in business now with, you know, two sets of books and Occupy Wall Street and everything. We lose sight of the fact that they're the 1%, you know, of the really rotten people out there. That 99% of the people you meet are good, honest, hardworking people, and if you have a good product and service that you're going to supply at a fair rate, you know, people will rally around you. And that was I guess I always kind of knew that, but until we went out on our own, I didn't really see it manifest like I did when we sort of hung out our shingle and started to talk to people about what we could do for them. And I really was amazed at how many just great people are out there and willing to help.
Well, I tell you, when I was talking to Larry, I was telling him we have a foundation called the Magic Wand Foundation, and we teach many things, especially to our youth. We're all about youth empowerment, and we teach them these seven mindsets to live your ultimate life. And Chester, one of the mindsets is we are connected, and our basic belief is that, you know, you meet people, and if you get to know them and you really explore things and you help each other, and you look for ways, there's real synergies there. It's amazing what people will do, and I guess this We Are Connected mindset you've experienced as well.
Oh, absolutely, and Larry Wingate, I've actually presented at a couple of conferences, and that guy is a certified ball of energy. I love his message, and I love his energy, but it really is true. You know, there was a famous play on Broadway called 6 Degrees of Separation, that nobody on the planet is separated by more than 6 degrees. And I think with Facebook and the internet and everything else, it's down to like, you know, 1 degree. But there are tremendous resources out there. You know, people like you, when people want to start businesses and get connected and give advice. You know, hardly a week goes by that either Adrian or I am not contacted by somebody that says, hey, we're thinking about writing a book. You know, what was your journey, and what kind of advice would you give us, and can you help us? And we're always happy to introduce people to our editors and our publishers and so on. I think where a lot of people stumble is they don't feel like they can ask, and you should. You know, people really do want to help, and all you need to do is ask.
One of the things that you actually said, and people do want to help, and obviously you've got a lot of experience. I mean, you guys are not only writing books, but national bestsellers. What's one of the key to really having a really successful book, and I guess to some extent one that really sells?
Well, you know, great question. I had lunch recently with the president of BookScan at Nielsen, you know, the guys who keep track of how many books are sold. And it was fun. We met at a friend's barbecue, and we were talking about stuff. And he says, "Oh, geez," he says, "Yeah, I know your books. You guys pop up all the time in the business section." And I asked him that same question. I said, "In your opinion, what is it that makes for a bestseller?" And he says, "You know, I get that question all the time. You know, I had my own opinion. I was just curious what he would say." He said, "First and foremost, you got to write a great book." And I thought, you know, that's so simple, but it's so true. You have to write a great book. You know, people will worry sometimes all about the marketing and the cover design and who's going to endorse it and who's going to write the foreword. Yeah, those are things you need to worry about at a certain point. But first and foremost, write a great book. So the question is, how do you write a great book, right? And for us, it's, you know, you keep it very simple. Be very direct in your language, you know. Have one voice in your book. You know, Adrian and I write together, but you don't hear two voices. You hear one voice. And so Adrian is the writer. You know, I'm the contributor. We collaborate. But, you know, there's one voice in the book. So you keep things very simple. For us in business books, having really reliable data, you know, make sure that your research is rock solid. Adrian and I aren't statisticians. We're not numbers guys. I always joke that I was, you know, I took a stats class in university, but I was in the half of the class that made the upper half of the class possible, you know, if you know what I mean. So surround yourself with good people, good research. And then for us, you know, the first three or four books we wrote, we didn't get a lot of editing. you know, we hired some help and so on. But with our publishers, we didn't get a lot of really good editing. When we started to publish with Simon & Schuster, with The Carrot Principle and subsequent books, we came across Emily Luce, who's just a brilliant, brilliant editor at Simon & Schuster. And when you get those kind of people involved that really take your work and they tear it down and they build it back up and they challenge you, that's when it gets really good. So that's the key to the first step is, you know, get good editors, get good research, simplify your language, but write a great book. You know, you have to ask yourself the question, why would somebody buy this book? What are the ahas? How will it really help people? And then why would they buy it from you? You know, that's really a big question. What's your credibility in the space? Like, I know why I buy a book written by Jack Welch. You know, why would I buy a book written by, you know, Adrian Gostick and Chester Elm? You know, what's their credibility? Now, the second thing that he talked about was the key to getting a bestseller is how do people discover your work? And I thought that was very insightful. You know, it's one thing to write a great book. There are a lot of great books out there that no one's ever been able to find, right? So how do you enable people to discover your work? And that's, again, where you come back to your network of people that you know. You know, how do I get it on the bookshelves? How do I get on radio shows? How do I get on TV shows? Who can help me promote this great idea that's my book so that people can discover my work? Does that make sense?
Makes all the sense in the world. And obviously, as you and I know, there's that whole online world and obviously websites and, you know, the ebook version of it, which is becoming very real. But so let's talk about the books. Obviously, let's start off with The Carrot Principle. And maybe you could talk just a little bit, Chester, what did you really wanted people to get from this book?
Well, you know, it's a very simple concept. Again, you know, the subtitle is how the best managers use reward and recognition to engage and retain top talent. You know, and it seems like a very simple thing to remember to say thank you to people, you know, when they do great work. But so few managers and so few leaders actually do it, you know, to take the time to say, hey, Mitch, you know, great show. You hit the deadline. You know, you had great guests. You always deliver, you know, more than we ask for, kind of thing. And in that book, we didn't just say, hey, remember to say thank you. But again, we went, it was research, over 200,000 surveys in 13 different countries, because we wanted to look at, you know, are there cultural nuances to reward and recognition? And certainly there are. You know, if you're from an Asian background or South American or European, there are nuances on ways you say thank you. But, you know, one of the things that we always brought out is that thank you in any language is good business. So we followed that path and said, hey, how does it impact people's attitudes and morale, and how does it impact engagement and even leadership attributes that jumped up way above the norm? So we dubbed it, you know, how do you create your own carrot culture? Not carrot and sticks, but carrot. And simple things that the leaders can do, like a handwritten thank you note. Like I might ask you, I mean, you've had a wonderful career. I'll bet you every now and again you receive a handwritten note from somebody, don't you?
Very seldom, Chester. Very, very seldom. Even though, you know, you and I would say, boy, that seems like common sense. It's not common. I don't get a lot of thank you, so I wish I could say differently, but it's not actually the case.
Well, see, but that proves the point, right? It's common sense that's uncommonly practiced. So, you know, we challenge people, say, look, get a stack of thank you notes and start writing 3 thank you notes a week. It takes, you know, 3 minutes maybe to write a thank you note, right? Nice, specific thank you note. And you'll be amazed at the impact it has. You know, I've talked to people who said, yeah, I've received a handwritten note. I say, great, did you keep it? Say, oh, yeah. In fact, you know, I put it in this drawer that I, with all my attaboys, so when I have a tough day, I pull those out, and it makes me feel valued again. You know, people put them in their journals. We had one lady that said she actually framed it and put it in her living room. She was so proud of it. But to your point, people will say, well, I just don't have the time. Say, well, you mean to tell me you haven't got 10 or 12 minutes a week to reach out to people that have really performed for you? So then I always ask them the question, let me get this straight. You don't have time for people who do a great job for you. How much time have you got when somebody screws up? Oh, well, and I'm on that like a duck on a June bug, you know. I mean, in a New York minute, I'm on that. So I said, you know, isn't it interesting that we've gone backwards in business? We make time for messes, but we don't make time for successes. And that really was the message of the book, that if you can create that carrot culture of reward, recognition, and appreciation, all kinds of business indicators get better. And so it was a wonderful message, and the book did extremely well. I mean, I think we sold over 300,000 copies of that book.
Which is a huge success, as we both know. What are some of the things you really wanted people to get out of? Now we'll move from carrots to oranges and the orange revolution and, you know, how one great team can transform an entire organization.
Well, great question. You know, it's funny, Adrian and I have been always very careful to be very customer focused. You know, what is it that businesses need to be successful? And we went from, you know, reward and recognition, which we found was an important component, but people kept saying, you know, we've got these little pockets of excellence. We need more of them. And they come down to these small teams, and sometimes transformative teams. And so Orange Revolution actually isn't the fruit orange, it's just the color. And we love it because it's that transformational color, you know, like the sunrises and sunsets and the turning of the leaves. And there were actually some orange revolutions in Ireland and the Ukraine. You know, it's a very vibrant color. And anyway, we borrowed, you know, orange from carrots. Most carrots are orange. And so that was kind of our theme going through. But the idea of great teamwork, you know, more and more, you have to be collaborative to be successful in business. And we came across a brilliant leader named Scott O'Neill. When we first met him, he was with the NBA, and now he's president of Madison Square Garden Sports. And the way he was able to very quickly build teams, and we found this in other, again, research-based, over 300,000 surveys that we got from the Best Companies Group. So, you know, really embedded in great data. But the fact he says, you know, you got to get people to focus on their noble cause. You know, most companies can tell you what they do and how they do it. Great companies can tell you why they do it. And that was a big aha for us. I'll bet you've seen that in some of the businesses you've worked with.
Yes, I have. And there is a correlation to, you know, how well that they actually do. You know, one of the things, too, Chester, that I thought would be great for you to talk a little bit about, and, you know, we kind of alluded to it in the Carrot Principle, but, you know, how to really build a positive workforce and build loyalty.
Yeah, no, so often, I mean, you hear it all the time, I'm spending more time at work than I am with my own family. Work should be more enjoyable. You know, and it should be more engaging. It should be more rewarding. And, you know, the foundation to that, I really believe, is have you found ways to engage your employees? Find out what's important to them as well. And make sure, you know, we're working with a wonderful a bank up in upstate New York called First Niagara Bank. And they're very focused on hiring for the right fit. And I think this is so important for businesses of all sizes. You know, when somebody comes to apply for a job with you, is it the right fit? Do they get what it is you do and why you do it, right? Can you really engage them, not just intellectually, but emotionally? And if you can get the right fit, you know, one of the examples we use in the book, and it's often cited, but we spent a lot of time with the folks at Zappos.com. And if you were to ask people what Zappos.com does, they'd say, well, we sell shoes online. But if you were to ask the employees what they do at Zappos.com, they say, oh, we deliver happiness in every box. You know, that's a big difference. That's a lot more fun to go to work, you know, not thinking, hey, I'm going to ship a bunch of shoes today, as opposed to, hey, I'm going to make somebody's day great today. I'm going to ship them happiness in a little box. So, you know, those are kind of the keys. Have you got a noble cause that you can rally people around? And have you got the right fit with the people that work with and for you? Does that resonate with you, Mitch?
It totally does. Matter of fact, I work very closely with a company here in Atlanta called Accent that many could say is in the software business, especially for special needs kids. But the reality is we all go to work because we care deeply about our youth, and we're all about youth empowerment. And that empowerment of youth is what drives us. So I think you've nailed it.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you talk about finding a way to really engage emotionally. A good friend of mine was a CEO down in Dallas at a hospital there, a City of Dallas hospital, in fact. And it was so funny, they were getting horrible ratings from their patients and their families. And they said, well, we've got to get our rating up higher. And so when, you know, his different leaders said, well, let's set a goal to be 3.7 out of 4.0, which was their measure of excellence. And he said, well, that sounds good. How about this? How about we try to create raving fans out of our patients and their families? You know, it's just a completely different take. And the guys in the food services were rebranding themselves City Gourmet. Like, this is hospital food. You know what I'm saying, Mitch? This is not the place you take your wife for a romantic night out. It's the hospital food, right? And but it did. It made a difference. You know, all of a sudden they were passionate about creating raving fans and really taking care of their patients. And, you know, within a year, he'd completely changed the culture at that hospital to one of, you know, we made you better, you're welcome, now get out, you know, to hey, you know, we really do care about you, much like you just said about your business there, about special needs kids and empowering youth. And it's a whole different take. The energy goes up, the passion goes up, and as my father used to say, there's no substitute for enthusiasm.
None at all. Matter of fact, it's critical, especially from the top, as I like to say. And, you know, you're a perfect person to ask this question of it, and that is, how do you really build, Chester, a great culture?
Well, you know, it's a lot of the things we talked about. You know, you have a noble cause, you hire the right people, but I think, you know, from the top down, your people have to know that you care about them as well. You know, I find that the best business cultures are ones that actually don't put the clients first. They put their employees first, you know, because they understand the simple truth, right, that if you have highly engaged and passionate employees and that really know why you do what you do and give their all every day, you're going to be successful, you know, and they're going to take care of the customers. You know, the old school was the customer's always right. Put the customer first. Well, I think that dynamic has changed quite a bit. And really, particularly if you're entrepreneurial and you start with a small group of people, is the people that work with and for you, they have to know that you care about them first and that you'll make everything else work out. And I think we've seen this year in the Northeast where I live. I live up in New Jersey. When, you know, these earthquakes and hurricanes and nor'easters come through, how do you rally around your people first and make sure they're okay and care about their families? Those messages, I think, are what really build great cultures, genuine leaders that really care about their people.
I think you nailed it. I think it is all about your people. And matter of fact, one of the things I thought would be great actually to talk about is, you know, what you might call, including in one of your books, the invisible employee. You know, how do you build a culture also based on trust and appreciation?
Well, here's the thing. I'm a big fan of specificity. And I think, you know, trust is built through very clear and specific communication. I think, you know, when leaders shut down those communication channels, that gets very dangerous, you know, when you've got very autocratic leadership where it says, look, I'll tell you what you need to know and when you need to know it. And if I need your opinions, I'll ask, but don't count on it, you know, because I'm the boss and you're the employee, and I know better. That's why I'm the boss and you're just the employee. You know what I'm saying? Now, that sounds kind of stereotypical, but it's more common than we'd like to admit, where, you know, people get promoted, they're afraid of being wrong, they don't want to open themselves up to any kind of criticism, and so they barricade themselves in their offices or their cubicles, and they send out lots of emails and lots of, you know, memos, and not a lot of work gets done. And that's when people become invisible. They start keeping their ideas to themselves because they don't want to be ridiculed or shot down. And, you know, you kind of muddle through the day. You know, you clock in at 9:15 and you clock out at 4:45 and you just hope your check clears, you know. So to me, that cloak of invisibility is again, from leaders and cultures that aren't open. If you're open and you're listening and you encourage people, you know, even when you don't get the results you want, I think those are great cultures that encourage some risk. Say, hey, look, it didn't work this time. Keep trying. You know, we want your best effort. Just because it didn't work this time doesn't mean it won't work next time. Those are the kinds of ways I think that you build trust. And then, to me, one of the big findings we had from the CARE principle was leaders that gave a lot of praise and recognition had the highest trust scores. There was a direct correlation because people felt when they performed, they'd be recognized. We asked, you'll love this, Mitch, we asked in a focus group, how did your manager break trust with you? One of the most common answers was, took credit for my work. And I think that was very, very telling.
Well, you know, it says a lot about those that can give credit to others. You know, there's that famous quote, help people get, you know, where they want to go and they'll bring you with them. And once you can detach yourself from a lot of that, you can help a lot of people. But in wrapping up here, and again, listeners, if you just tuning in, you've been listening to Let's Talk Business right here on WREK, 100,000 watts, 91.1 on your FM dial. And joining us all the way from New Jersey has been Chester Elton. We're talking about his journey. We're talking about his books. And in finishing up, you know, we kind of started off in this place. And I try and imagine myself sitting at home and watching 60 Minutes. And there I am on 60 Minutes and opening up the New York Times. And, you know, there I am in China. And, you know, one time you're just, you know, selling that media time. So based on all these things that have gone on, Chester, I thought it'd be great. Maybe any advice you would give any entrepreneurs out there that are running a business or thinking about starting one and how to really be successful.
Well, you're going to think this is a funny answer, but I think one of the most important things you can do in your business and in your life is marry well. I like my father, I married way above my station. I think in particular when you embark on an entrepreneurial, you know, adventure, make sure your family is all in, you know. And I've been very lucky to have married just my perfect soulmate in Heidi Olson, who's now Heidi Elton. And, you know, when you've got your family supporting you and encouraging you, I think that's a key element. I think so often, you know, we get an idea and we charge out there, we forget to take our families with us, and it can cause you all kinds of problems. So first and foremost, marry well. Secondly is to surround yourself with just the best people you can find. You know, I've been just incredibly lucky to have found Adrian Gostick, who's my co-author. Not only is he my co-author, he's probably the best friend I've ever had, and smart and gifted and on and on. Just, you know, when you find excellence, you know, gravitate towards that and bring your talents with you. But to me, if your family is very supportive and you've surrounded yourself with good people, and like you say, when you can contribute and say, hey, look, my goal is to help make other people successful, I think those are the foundation, those are the building blocks for a great business and actually, I think, for a great life. You know, we with the CARE principle and with the Orange Revolution, we talked about the ability to cheer for other people, you know, be happy with their success, and that a life of gratitude is a happy life. And, you know, that's my formula. I don't know if you'd agree or disagree, but it's worked well for me.
Well, I think it's a great formula, and I think having support in those good times and tough times, you know, you need it. And as you said, Heidi's done you well, and four great kids and some great books. I look forward to your new book. And again, listeners, if you want to learn all about Adrian and Chester, go to their website, www.thecultureworks.com. That's thecultureworks.com. You can also learn about Chester at Chester Elton, ELTON.com. And I don't know where the time goes here, Chet, but hopefully you enjoyed yourself today.
No, listen, call again anytime. I've really enjoyed it. And you got to tell your listeners about your incredible photography skills as well. For those of you listening, every email that Mitch sends me, he attaches a little photograph. It brightens up my day, and he's gifted.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and I guess the best thing I could say to end this interview is thank you.
So, you got it. Thank you, Mitch.
All right, buddy. And I want to thank, of course, all the people that make this show possible. I want to thank my engineer, Fred. I want to thank everyone here at WREK. I want to thank, of course, Grace and Jonathan and everyone else. I want to thank all my friends and supporters at Accent. And, of course, Scott and Jeff and Juan, and the list goes on and on. David, That's what makes this go. Earlier, I talked a little bit about our Magic Wand Foundation, www.magicwandfoundation.org. And if you're an entrepreneur that needs support, we'd love to help you. Go to ltbn.com. That's ltbn.com, and much more. Bye-bye now.